Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Inatech.
No, you're working at Inatech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Oh, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million.
Well, up there, Section Jacks, up somehow. Spent Weber on the board. SP Futures up 25. Dow Futures up 249. NASDAQ Futures up 67. As we continue our run for the sky here, every day I say we're printing money, and every day we're printing money. So what can I say, Maddie? We're up again today. It looks like Peter Navarro has clarified that the U.S. China trade deal is not over. So I wonder if Peter bought spoos before he said that. Just, boy, am I becoming a suspicious old gentleman.
You mean before he first said the China deal was over, then clarified that it wasn't over?
Yeah. just because these become very tradable events, why is it that, maybe I watch too much, NCIS. What does, Jethro Gibbs say? I don't believe in circumstances. No. Just saying.
And who was it that, there was somebody who said, I don't believe in coincidences? Was that Columbo or somebody like that?
Don't believe in what?
Coincidences?
Yeah. That's what I meant. Coincidences, not circumstances. I was thinking of, watching The Stooges the other night when Curly said he was a victim of circumstance. Yeah. Anyway, but no, I mean, we're seeing money. I was just listening on CNBC while we're getting ready for the show. Brennan was the big debate about extending the money, the 600 hours past the end of July, and the idea that how many people are being paid more than they make at work. Now, you know, I've been a huge champion of people don't make enough at work. It has been a decade, 20-year-long fiasco in that regard, that people are not keeping up with the pace of anything. But the idea that you're just going to... I mean, talk about mana for the people. I mean, we're printing money and giving it to people. I never even dreamed that would happen ever, just on a continual basis at this level.
Think about the unintended consequences of that $600. I mean, it's great, and, you know, I agree with your point that people need to be making more money in most of the jobs that they're working at right now. I mean, you, for example, when you're making $5 million a year in your job, you definitely need to be making more. But just like the busboys and the dishwashers and people like that, the hamburger flippers at McDonald's, if they're the sole breadwinner, they need to be making more. But they're really put in a dilemma right now. There's a conundrum that they're facing. In the short term, until at least July 31st, their unemployment benefits are more than what they were making if they go to work. But once July 31st happens, it looks like, you know, there's less than a 50-50 chance that $600 a week will be extended. So they're going to be making less money than they had. But in the meantime, if they're offered their job back, the restaurant opens up and say, come on back to work, and they say no, they could lose their unemployment, including that extra $600. So not only are they not getting that extra $600 a week, they're not getting anything.
I can't believe, Brendan, even though I know that's been the tout, and that's what people are saying, and that's why you just said it. I don't believe there's any way on earth that McDonald's is going to call up Joe Jamoke, have him say, I'm afraid to come back because of the virus. And they're somehow going to find somebody at the state that they can call and say, pull Joe Jamoke off the rolls.
Maybe not in Illinois, but I think you're going to see that in some places and other states where that's been challenged. Wasn't it?
The
governor of Iowa said that. The governor of Iowa said that if they don't go back to work, she would take steps to pull their unemployment.
We're on two different chessboards here. You are talking about the theory of it, and I'm agreeing with you 100%. I'm saying they're not that organized. That the last thing the chairman McDonald is going to do is call and rat out Matt Weber with the state of Illinois. And the state of Illinois has no mechanism to A, prove the claim, because he's going to have to, they're going to have to send something to Matt Weber and say, I mean, you're an attorney, you know this. But they're going to send something to Matt Weber. McDonald says you refuse to come back to work because you're making $900 a week and you told him to pound sand. And you're going to write back, oh, no, I visit my elderly mother once a week. I don't think that their procedures are good enough for me to not get COVID. I mean, this is going to be a goat bleep. This is not a simple phone call to an organized bureaucracy.
No, but I think that you will see some businesses that do report. Plus, don't the people receiving unemployment have a duty to say that I've not been offered a job? Aren't they asked that question on a weekly basis?
No.
I think it's biweekly, but yeah, you have to, I can find out because I have two people close to me that are doing this, but you have to attest to certain things. You know, have you been trying to get a job?
They can go for perjury and be criminally prosecuted and have to pay back the money if they lie.
Brendan, we can't
other sanctions.
We can't prosecute murderers, for God's sake. And the courts are closed.
This isn't murder. This is an economic and usually by people who have lesser means. Get your information straight here.
I understand that, but I guess I'm agreeing with you that yet disagreeing with you about the mechanism. We're talking about some states like Florida getting people. They can't get people on the rolls yet that have been off work for 8 weeks. So how the hell, before you were even on, you're going to be off?
I think in that case, they should be getting a back paycheck for the time that they qualified for unemployment but did not receive the money. So, yes, they may get their money after they've gone back to work.
I can't agree with you more on what you're saying. I can't disagree with you more on your belief in them and the mechanism here as being decent. If that's and Maddie's sort of in the middle, but I just can't imagine McDonald's making those phone calls, and then somebody picking up the phone. Unless there's essentially a website that the state puts out there that says any company can call out, can file somebody's name on this website and we'll cut them off the rolls, no questions asked. I can't imagine that happening. Can you?
It'd be very difficult to do that from a political standpoint. Any mayor, governor, or state authority would really get some bad publicity for something like that, for cutting people off of unemployment because they say that they don't want to go back to work because of COVID, when the real reason is that they're getting more money on unemployment than they would have if they were back working.
Well, they would be taking them off unemployment because of an accusation from an employer without any sort of a follow-up.
Well, no, it's also part of the self-reporting. If I'm making that money right now, and like Maddie said, it's every 2 weeks, I've got to make a statement that I've not sought gainful employment and I've not had a job offer. And it turns out that you have offered me $1,000 a week to come back and work for PTI or something like that. Then I'm lying when I make that certification. And if that's discovered, then I'm out of money. I could be prosecuted.
All right. So right now what happens if somebody, I'm asking because I don't know and I don't think anybody knows, which Maddie and I were talking about on the way in. Have you ever seen anything as bleeped up in your lifetime in terms of the information age? The information appears to be all wrong. Last night I was listening to two idiots, I use that term lightly, but on TV railing about people so ignorant they won't wear a mask, and the guy's wearing some homemade mask with some, you know, company's thing on it that isn't worth a crap at all. It's only in his mind he's doing good to anybody. It wasn't a surgical mask. It wasn't even a mask a dentist assistant would wear. And he's got like some homemade thing up there. And everything I read saying those things are useless, other than the person who sold them to you made a few bucks on them. Anyway, but what are your rights now if you get called back to work as a cook, and you see the kitchen is 20 feet by 20 feet, and there's 10 people in there, and you say, can't distance, I'm not going.
That has not been fully decided yet, in state by state, because the states are requiring, in most cases, at least verbally, they're saying you've got to make accommodations for the safety of your workers. I haven't heard any situations where that's actually been dealt with, where the short order cook goes back into the kitchen that's 5x8 and has four people working in it.
That's because the short order cooks don't have an attorney. Right? I mean, all they want to do is get back to work. They're not the kind of
that's
people
right.
that are looking for ways to stay away from work. But I happen to have heard of a few people, like I said, some of Audrey's friends that are all, you know, very independent, self-made ladies. Let's just say other people in their families are not. And they're loving $1,000 a week.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm looking at my chart here. I always have a chart, Brendan, especially for a guy like you that I like to hit up with some facts. Not that you don't have any. What is the current state in Illinois of unemployment? What does that come out to per hour?
What does it come out to per hour?
Yeah.
I have no idea what we're making in Illinois right now.
No. The current 600 hours plus Illinois. Does everybody get the full amount in Illinois, or is it based on what you were making?
It's based on what you were making. I think it's a percentage of what your earnings were.
But the max is what, maybe like 400?
The max is 484.
484? So you had 600 of that.
$1,000 under this new scenario.
Well, 1084.
1084 would be the absolute possible max you can get in Illinois.
All right, according to this chart, that comes out to $24 an hour, like $23.90 or something.
Which, if you're getting that, you make way more than that normally.
Who? Mm-hmm. Who does?
Like, if you're getting 484, you're probably making over $75,000 a year normally.
Right, well, but it'd be like 450 or 430. It wouldn't be like 100.
No, it wouldn't. But like, my brother's not getting 484, but Jill's right. getting 484.
Right. Well, so say it's
so like for her, it's still a huge pay cut, but it's not bad. Obviously, certainly you'll take it.
She's not a dancer or choreographer at 24 hours.
But like a bartender's not getting 484.
Bartender's 13. Look at the chart here, because he probably gets some tips. These numbers are fast food workers 11, so they're 220% of what they're making. Amusement attendants, $12 an hour. Cashiers, $12 an hour. Home health aides, $13 an hour. Bartenders, 13. Retail salespeople, 14. Pharmacy aides, 15. How the hell can a pharmacy aide make only $15 when every prescription is about $4 an hour? Tour and travel guides, 15. Security guards, 16. I didn't know they only made $16. Security guard? Hmm. Barber, 17. That's before tips, I assume.
Now, think about that. How many security guards are walking around malls and buildings with guns on their shoulders? And what are they getting, $16 an hour?
Yeah.
That gives me a lot of comfort.
And no tips. This is scary. EMT and paramedic, 19.
Wow, that's not very much for an EMT.
No, and how long you got to go to... What's the training for that, Maddie? 2 years? 3 years? To be a paramedic?
I would assume so, yeah.
Yeah. Good Lord. No wonder everybody wants to get on the Chicago Fire Department paramedic. I'm sure they make more than that.
Or Chicago Fire TV as a paramedic.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, how about... There's another question. I have to have my buddy Scott. He actually volunteered to come in today, but we're full up. He's not a work actor, right? All those shows are stopped. Chicago Med, Chicago PD... They haven't filmed a scene since, I'm going to say, March, maybe?
Yeah.
All the last two or three shows from last year weren't, I don't know, what is it? You guys know more about this than me. They film bits and pieces of various shows as the year goes by, right? But they don't complete the final show until, what, like a couple weeks before?
Yeah, there's part of every show, but there's part of the shows that are filmed just within the last week to make sure that they have some relevance. But for the most part, they're filmed in bits and pieces based on the location of where they're at. But those three shows, Chicago Med, PD, and Fire, are filmed here in Chicago. There's a studio on the west side where they're filmed.
Yeah, and they're always on location. They're always at that their favorite spot. Two favorite spots are on the river where those old grain elevators are, and they love the 22nd Street Bridge.
Yep. Yeah, they also like the area where I used to live over near Fulton Jefferson. They're often over there in that area.
Yeah.
And there's a place in either Wicker Park or Bucktown that they use quite often for interior scenes. It's the household of one of the stars that we used to. I've got a friend who lives right next door to the house that they used and they said they paid really good money for renting the house, and they're there like a day or two, and it's some extraordinary amount of money, and then they put everything back exactly the way that it was when they walked in.
Yeah, they take all your furniture and stuff out, put all their stuff in, and bring all yours back exactly where it was.
Yep. Yeah, and they pay you a lot of money for it too.
Yeah, where we lived at 90th and Francisco, there's this really kind of odd architecture house. I mean, it wasn't crazy or anything. It was a nice house. I actually really liked it, but it was just totally different for the neighborhood. It was at 91st and Mozart. Everybody knows where Mozart is. It's a street between...
By California.
Yeah, between California and Francisco. And it was that was Ray Lucas' house in Crime Story.
Mm-hmm.
And the night they accused him of stealing trucks. They drove the big 18-wheeler up on the front lawn. They did it in that house at Evergreen Park. It was kind of wild. I mean, for Evergreen Park, it was like a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
So, speaking of things hitting close to home, our friend Matt Weber and our producer was mentioning how the gun shooters are getting close to our home. They're spreading out all over the city. This weekend was it. By the way, where's our mayor? Bitching and moaning about this weekend. I haven't heard her.
I haven't heard much about it either.
What was the number, Manny? 100 shootings or something?
It was 107 with 16 killed.
Yeah. Well, so I go down the list of addresses, which are right on the Hey Jackass. So I see 2700 Diversey, which is right where our girl Angelica lives. So I call her up. Right, I sent her an email. I go, hey, there was a shooting on your block. And she goes, she texts me back, what's the address? I give her the address. I forgot. I just pick her up at the place. I forget what the address was. And she goes, that's my building. The shooting was on the roof.
Wow.
Yeah, it was on the roof. And somebody emptied, they found 9 shell casings. And when they nailed this guy a couple times, but he didn't die. Must have been a 9mm. So she goes, no wonder the bleep owner of the building sent out an email that the roof area is not closed. They didn't mention why. They had a guy shot up
there. An active police team?
they decided no more parties, I guess. I mean, boy. I mean, this is... So a normal party you go to now, everybody's got a gun? Even in Dodge City...
Sounds like it might be that way.
God, even in Dodge City, didn't Wyatt Earp make people leave their guns when they walked in before they got drunk on a Saturday night?
Yeah.
We haven't learned?
There's not much... that you can say that's going to be worse than people drinking, having guns, and having political viewpoints. That's a recipe for a really good, quiet party.
And then on the way home, you got to blast each other on the expressway.
Yeah.
All right, so Brendan, as a man who's always hopeful about the world, how exactly do we wiggle out of this? How do we get back to the point where if somebody... gets this COVID. By the way, how is it that if you test positive, that all of a sudden the entire world knows you did? Our Secretary of State here, not Secretary of State, who was the guy who just, was it the Attorney General of Illinois?
Oh, Kwame Raoul.
Yeah.
Well, I think in that case, I think in a lot of these cases, people are announcing, because there are still privacy laws. If I have a test that is positive, the agency cannot disclose my name. But I can disclose my name.
Or why would you?
If I tell you, hey, I tested positive, you can say, hey, did you hear Brendan tested positive? But there are privacy rules that exist. But I think in Raul's case, he came out and he said that I am at home self-isolating because I was diagnosed with COVID. I was COVID positive and I'm not feeling well.
So it's okay. So it's a way of staying home from work. Not a reason.
Well, I think in his case, and in the case of some leaders, they want people to know, hey, this can really happen to you. This is real. This is not just some kind of a hoax that people that you never heard of get sick. But here's an example of me as the Attorney General getting sick, and you know who I am because my name is in the paper. So, yes, it happens to real people. It's not just somebody on the other side of the country who's getting sick in that disastrous ghetto of New York.
Well, I mean, here's from all the research I've done, and there's been a lot, and by the way, I haven't just done it myself. A lot of the listeners have sent me all kinds of stuff, so it's why a lot of the people on the show, have read a lot of the various studies and articles, and most of which, by the way, are total BS. But there have been a few that are decent, and actually some studies. It seems to me, Brennan, that this disease is like none other I've ever come across, and that your chances of getting it, because it's so contagious, are pretty high, and the chances of it not even bothering you at all are also very high. And I'm going to say that none of the policies that I've seen have reflected that reality, really.
Well, I agree with you on that. But also don't forget about those. I think part of the reason for all of this is the fact that, did you see the article about these two religious leaders, I think it was out in Arizona, have come up with this kind of an air freshener idea that kills COVID, 99% effective to kill COVID. I saw these guys on the news the other night. They're going to be near the place where Trump is going to be tomorrow for his gathering in Arizona. But they're promoting this aerosol type of a thing that they spray inside their church, and they said their research shows it kills 99% of the virus.
Okay. But now you let a whole new group of people in, and now it's back.
Oh, no, because it kills everything. Don't you understand? This is the newest thing.
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess. But that's like saying if you wash your kitchen floor, then you let the kids come in from the backyard, it's dirty again.
Mm-hmm.
What am I missing here?
No, I just think that there's a big belief that it is insignificant and is meaningless. That first, it's not as serious as people think, and even if you do get it, it's a minimal intrusion into your life because you're not going to get that sick. I think that's part of the fallacy.
Isn't a fallacy. That's exactly true.
But in many states, the hospitalizations are still going up. It does seem like the death rate is dropping over the last couple of weeks, even as the number of cases and the hospitalizations spike. It's not as deadly as it was, at least in the United States. It wasn't as deadly as it was in places like New York earlier this year. But, you know, I think it's still a pretty significant illness.
I don't disagree. What I'm saying is the policy had never reflected the facts. I mean, from the beginning, you needed to protect the people that were older, nursing homes, people who were compromised. Didn't really do that, did we?
Not very well.
And we're paranoid that people are 25 years older jogging the lakefront when most of those people are asymptomatic. Totally.
Mm-hmm. By the way, was that you I saw out my window the other day, yesterday, on the lakefront path, running up and down the lakefront?
No, I can't go.
Why can't you go?
Because I can't. I mean, because I have let myself get out of shape, I can't run my 4 or 5 miles without stopping, and I believe you can't stop.
Well, you can walk.
You can walk, well, for God's sake.
Yeah, you can walk.
But if I'm running for 80 yards, believe me, I'm stopping. So I get arrested.
You need to walk.
Then I get arrested.
Instead of running.
Well, I could do that, but I'm saying
that's your excuse for not working out?
Yeah, I can't stop.
You're making up the fact that you're going to get arrested?
Yeah.
Well, Chief, here's what you do. When you feel that way, just lean forward, and when your center of gravity is a little off-center, your weight will pull you forward. Gravity will just pull you forward, so you'll keep moving.
Well, this is when back in the day, but we're talking about one of the dumbest things I ever did. This is really stupid. This is back when the communication wasn't the same that it was now. There I was jogging right by the kind of park house that nobody uses in the middle of Lincoln Park on the north end. I don't think anybody's been in the place, but it's like an old building. Anyway, it's
up near Montrose?
No, it's by North Avenue. That end.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, I'm going one way and we're doing some work on the path. And this lady's coming the other way. When I say lady, young girl, because I was young. And she trips on this thing and falls and scrapes the hell out of her knee. And three idiot guys run right by her. I stop. I help her up. She got a big gash in her knee, but she's a trooper, not to mention she's drop dead gorgeous. Not that I noticed. So we jogged for about a half a mile. She went right back into it. Then, you know, not a peep. And it turns out, I'm thinking, God, this is my lucky day. The big guy upstairs dropped the one right in front of me, right? And all of a sudden she says, well, she's in for a wedding from Philadelphia, And, oh, by the way, she's got to get back to her place because she's flying back in a couple hours. Other than that, she'd love to have coffee. You think I was so dumb I never even had... Those were back in the day where now you'd say, well, what's your email? What's, you know, whatever. You'd be carrying the phone and we'd say, let's text or whatever. I just said, okay, see ya. And I'm like, and I'm a mile away, I'm going, God, that was the dumbest thing you ever did. But, I mean, in those days, you never even thought to say, well, wait a minute, let's pull out our big cell phones and connect or touch base or something.
Right.
Different world.
Touch phones and exchange your information.
Yeah, well, I couldn't do that with mine. But anyway, but see, now they would have arrested her because she fell. I would have, instead of picking her up, I would have been forced to arrest her and say, citizen's arrest from Lori Lightfoot. Just saying.
I have this image of you impersonating Barney Fife or Gomer Pyle chasing Barney Fife saying, citizen's arrest, citizen's arrest.
What a great episode that was. Brendan, thank you very much, buddy. SP Futures up 25, NASDAQ Futures up 73. We'll be back, Mr. Joel and Cannon. I don't think his horse won, Matty, because he wasn't gonna bet a 4-5 shot, but we'll find out. We'll be right back.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering three of our research newsletter, the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription. 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howie, Mr. Mel Weber. S&P Futures up 26, the NASDAQ Futures up 74. Again, we've got Apple up another $6. Apple goes up every day. It's going to be worth more than the rest of the country here pretty soon. It's just stunning to me that every day we buy the same six stocks. I mean, I know they're growing at the expense of other people here, but I don't know, Manny, are we buying that many more cell phones because of the COVID? Maybe we are. I have no idea, but
I can't imagine.
I mean, Dow Futures up 239. Peter Navarro, who hates the China deal, is now saying it's not over. So, I mean, I hope he made some money on whatever he was trading this morning. I know that's a nasty accusation, but this is just happening way too much. Anyway, because here's the headline. Futures rise 200 points after Peter Navarro clarifies the U.S. China deal is not over. Anyway, that's where we are with that. Around the rest of the world here, we've got over in Europe, the DAX up 319, that's 2.6%. Those guys are looking for a way to spend their $1 trillion. FTSE up 76, 1.2%. CAC around up 78, 1.6. Over in Asia, we've got Nikkei up 111.5%. Shanghai up 5.2%. Hang Seng up 396, 1.6. Bonds, where are we doing on the bonds here? Bonds, I want to come up. Manny, why don't you do Travis Weather Sports, and then we'll get the rest of this stuff. There we go. 0.72 on the bonds. The Bund, minus 0.41. The Japan, boy, these guys, they are right on this flat line. 0.005 positive. That's crazy. Oil unchanged, but over $40. 40.46. Brent up 78 cents. 43.86. That's interesting with the Brent up that much. Up almost 2% and ours unchanged. Natural gas down a penny. RBOB up 2 cents. $1.31. So I'm going to say we're going to be over $3 here pretty anytime soon with that thing keep going up. Gold up 390, 1770. Silver up 9 cents, 1799. But again, we were 18 yesterday, so silver and gold had a decent move. Copper up another 2 cents, 266. Manny, what do you got for us? Trevor Weather Sports.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We have one issue to report this morning. That's on the south side, I-57 northbound just before Sibley Boulevard. There's a crash blocking the left lane. This has from I-80 to the Dan Ryan up to 17 minutes. So expect some delays as crews work to get that accident cleared off of the northbound I-57. But everything else is looking good out there. No issues on the Ryan, Bishop Ford, or the Stevenson. Eisenhower looking good, as are the Edens and Kennedy. Lakeshore Drive is all quiet in both directions. Suburban tollways are quiet, too. One other thing of note, Chief, it looks like the CTA, as part of its ongoing efforts to welcome riders back to public transit, is distributing free travel healthy kits to customers this week, featuring a bottle of hand sanitizer, a reusable cloth mask, and a healthy riding tips guide. Today from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m., these packs will be handed out at the Clark and Lake stop and the 95th Street Red Line stop. And on the pink line as well at Polk. So they're trying to make people feel comfortable getting back on trains and buses, and that's how they're doing it.
It's free, it's for me.
That's right. In sports, the big news of the day is Major League Baseball plans to hold a 60-game season after all. That will begin around July 24th, but first needs players to sign off on a health and safety protocol and to pledge to arrive at home stadiums by July 1st, so they have time to prepare. After, 3-plus months of negotiations, MLB just opted to use the right given to it in the party's March 26th agreement, the original agreement, to impose a schedule of its desired length that pays the players a prorated salary. Chief.
They wanted to pay them less, right?
Oh, yeah. They wanted to pay them a percentage of the actual, profit based on, not having either no fans or limited fans in the stadium.
Joel, are you with us?
Yeah, and I think that's great. I think baseball season's way, way, way too long, and I don't know, maybe they should stick with their 60-game schedule. Who cares about 162 games? I mean, that's way too goddamn many. So baseball's dying anyways. The only people that watch it are old people listen to the radio, and instead, this might actually help baseball, especially after the Astros scandal last year, shaking it up a little bit.
Everybody's forgotten the Astros scandal with the COVID.
Yeah, I kind of like the sprint, though. I think Joel's right. You do a 60-game sprint with a bunch of doubleheaders like this, and it'll be pretty
exciting. No doubleheaders.
I have to believe if they're going to fit 60 games in 2 months. I mean,
the health officials somewhere said you can't do doubleheaders for health reasons.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
That happened like last week.
What about with rain delays? I mean, what about?
Well, I don't know about that, but I don't think they have.
Yeah, if they're going to try to fit 60 games between July 24th and September 27th. There's going to be some doubleheaders.
Somebody ruled against it like 2 weeks ago.
Wow, that's crazy.
I mean, I admit it could have been overrun. Don't take that as gospel. Why don't you look it up? So, Joel, I'm going out to Belmont this afternoon. I understand your horse is finishing this afternoon.
Yeah. Hey, I nailed that race for about half of it. He went to the top, which I thought he would. And then I wanted them to get some cover, you know, get some live cover out there. And I was watching it with my wife and my daughter Emily. And when he didn't get cover at the half, I said, "My horse is a pig," and that's exactly what he did. He his DeLaw looks great. I thought the layoff may hurt him. I can hear a lot of people talking that, oh, well, you know, the new format is not going to help the Triple Crown. I'd say the contrary. I mean, you know, not having the mile-and-a-half race, having the two-month layoff now between now and the Kentucky Derby, and then another month layoff, I think that's a huge advantage. So I'm flipping the switch. At first, I thought that you wouldn't see one if they ran the Belmont a mile-and-a-half. They didn't. So, hey, that horse looked good.
No, where did they...
Didn't cash, Chief. You're right.
I didn't. I've never been to Belmont. Where do they have to start mile and an eighth? They start at the head of the stretch or something.
They had a chute for them. They had a chute. They came out of a chute.
Really?
Yeah. You really seem to be fixated on that. They can't start it in the middle of the track. Yeah. They do that. They have a chute. All these tracks have a chute. Off of the distance, you know, they're big. They got the turf. They got, you know, these places are big. So to create a chute for them is
Reason why I ask is Arlington has a chute, but it's a mile chute. So if you do a mile and an eighth, they actually start in front. When Secretariat ran there, it was a mile and an eighth or something. They started actually at the head of the home stretch. So sometimes it's hard when 3-year-olds have to pass the grandstand twice.
Well,
that's the reason why I asked.
You didn't have to worry about passing the grandstand at all.
Yeah,
that's you know, and if you think about, like, I know this is a year ago, and I, you know, to bring up the controversy with that maximum security, but you know that horse. I mean, he definitely jumped out. Was it the rider? I don't know. Was it the horse, or was it just, you know, 100,000 screaming fans that maybe spooked the horse? So. It was eerie. I mean, my dad told me, I've mentioned before, my dad's been involved in harness racing, rode a lot of the off-track wagering walls and off-track betting. He told me back in the 70s, he said, you know what, eventually you're going to have horses racing at the track and there's going to be no one there. Now, I don't think he would predicted the COVID-19, but yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, people just need the bat, and I love being there. I mean, I can't cash a darn ticket. I'm on twinspires.com, and I used to still go out to the track to get my tickets until Hazel Park closed. I like having that physical ticket in my hand. You can still print it, but, man, I can't pick a winner for the life of me doing this stuff online. I can't hold the program. I can't beat it against the bench. It's, you know, I guess I'm too old-fashioned, Chief.
Well, I mean, going to the track is nice, but I mean, as my aunt and uncle who loved the track, you know, as they aged, they just went to the OTB by their house. I mean,
yeah.
But I mean, it wasn't like, Arlington used to have 20,000 people a day, and they were down to 5 or 6, but with the OTB, I mean, it's not like there was nobody there, you know.
Hey, do they still have that Wiener Circle? I know what the Wiener Circle is. That's the hot dog place on Wrightwood and Clark.
Yeah.
But do they still have the that OTB downtown?
No.
No?
that most
I'm
of the
at least to bolt out and launch and catch a couple of races there.
There's not
the,
many.
There's one in Lincoln
from the Merck.
Yeah, there's one in Lincoln Park by us on Weed Street. That's the closest one, probably.
There's only a couple open now. Yeah, most of them closed.
Most of them are in the suburbs. There's not many in the city anymore.
But even some of those closed, I think. I
mean, I'm sure. Yeah.
But it's for some reason, Joel, they had every time they get a new idea for new gamblers, you know. And again, this is me being a curmudgeon. When they start greasing other people's pockets, the new gambling always gets an advantage over the old. And for the longest time, you could have video poker in like bars. You still can't have it at Arlington or an OTB place, which is really crazy when you think about it. Anyway, Joe, what do you make of this market?
What do I make of this market? I make this market moves down, 50 handles on a comment by Navarro. I mean, boom, I got my execution. I was long. I got my execution. I was stopped out. I mean, what a finicky market to drop down like that. To me, that really aggravates me. Strong close yesterday. Technically you want to buy the open or try and get long last night for the overnight ramp up. So, man, that has me coming in looking at a loss, and I tried to go long, 70 handles ago. So that's a little bit discouraging. I mean, as long as you look at your big boys, Microsoft, Apple, Amazon, and Google, Facebook, man, who cares about the other 495 stocks? These stocks are carrying the market. They love the lockdown stocks too. I mean, this is just this market just has incredible resiliency, and you just can't stand in the way.
Fed balance sheet actually ducked down a little bit last week, a very slight amount. Well, I mean, does it bother you at all that it is only six stocks? I mean, how many more days in a row can Apple go up $5? I mean, let's just run it up to a $4 trillion company. I mean, what's it, $10 trillion, $100 trillion? Is there no max?
There's not.
You're
no,
probably right.
Not. They each take their turns. I mean, they had the Worldwide Developer Conference yesterday. Woo! Everyone's excited about the new products. I had a hell of a time with my Apple Watch yesterday, so I'm not totally satisfied with the company. But the supply chains are back online. They're making new products. What else are they? I mean, the Apple TV. I saw a couple interesting things. Now they're doing something in the car for your cars. I mean, they're innovative and people love their products. And you can't fight the tape in this one, Chief.
Probably right. Take care, buddy. Talk to you next week.
All right,
Futures up 26. Nas, if you're up 67, be right back.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. Do you know when the unofficial start of real estate season is in the Chicago area? It's actually right after the Super Bowl. Yep, it's the time when the guys will finally get off the couch and the families start looking for homes in the area. Now, interest rates also have been hovering around 4%, and the selection of properties are great. And if you're a first-time home buyer, there is an Illinois program that allows you to purchase a home for only 1% down. And that also applies to anyone who hasn't owned a home in the past 3 years. So if you're thinking about it, this is the perfect time. Call or email me, and I will send you a free list of homes designed to your specifications in your area. My phone number is 708-349-3456, or you can email me, AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com. That's AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Can't buy me love, love, can't buy me love, buy you diamond ring, my
well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Ollies, Mr. Matt Weber, Mr. Kenny Pulcheri on the road again. Are you playing the song while you're on the road? Kenny, you with us? Kenny, can you hear us, bud?
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, on the road again.
on my way, I'm just in Connecticut, on my way back to the city.
That's interesting. Is anybody on the train anymore?
No, I'm driving, so I don't know. I have no idea who's on the train or who isn't. My sense is there's not that many people yet on the train as the city's just starting to reopen. But I'll get a better sense, you know, once I get there about how much is going on, although you can tell, and people that I talk to, people are anxious to get out. The weather's better. They want to sit outside. They at least want to socialize and see people, whether or not they're, you know, 6 feet apart or 8 feet apart. People are aching for, you know, some socialization, right?
Absolutely. What, are you going back to the exchange?
No. I can't go to the exchange because, you know, they're only letting people that work in the building on the floor right now. I no longer work in the building, and so even though I have a media pass to go in, they're not doing media from the floor right now, so therefore my pass has been turned off.
What about your antibody card?
My antibody card? Yeah, I don't think that's going to get me in. I don't think that's going to get me in at the moment.
So it doesn't do you any good. They've already had to think.
Yeah, I know, it doesn't do me any good, but what are you going to do? You know, everyone's remaining cautious, I suppose, as they should, but it is what it is at the moment, right? We'll see how it goes. And it seems to be going okay, at least up here in the Northeast, between Massachusetts and New York. Cases are declining, so that's a good thing as the both states begin to reopen.
Is anybody in that area, I don't know if the answer to the question to this, but the only serious random test where the governor tried to find out, actually it wasn't the governor, it was the universities, tried to find out what the story was in their state, was in all places Indiana. Is any of these other people that are on TV all day long with their face bleeding out, whatever they believe, any of these people have any idea what they're dealing with? Do they have any kind of a random sample? I mean, are they just shooting from whatever part of the body you want to lob out there?
Well, I think it depends on who you're talking about, right? If you have one of the scientists on or the doctors on, yeah, I kind of believe they're speaking from a very scientific viewpoint, and I have to believe that what they're talking about is realistic enough that they certainly understand what it means in terms of the spread, of the possible spread, and a vaccine, and a therapy, and all that stuff. So I think all that stuff is great. I think other people certainly, you know, whether they're asset managers or analysts, whatever, they're all speaking. A lot of them are talking their book, and a lot of them are just, you know, everyone's very optimistic, and I remain optimistic myself. but that doesn't mean that that the market's not going to react to the headline. And you saw that happen last night at 9 p.m. when Peter Navarro got on a Fox News interview and blurted out. You know, I think his mouth engaged before his brain even thought about it, where he blurted out that, you know, the trade deal was dead. And then you saw what happened immediately.
Yeah.
Futures plummeted 400 or 500 points. I mean, it was in seconds after he said it. You know, and then he, and I can only imagine people like Kudlow and Mnuchin and Bobby Lighthizer are sitting inside the White House going, oh my God, what did he just say? Because, you know, it caused that immediate reaction. And that just goes to the sensitivity that the market feels on really some of those big headlines, right? Whether it's about trade, whether it's about the virus, whether it's about reopening. And so I think the market's going to continue to have that that kind of anxiety in it until there's much more clarity.
How many trades do you think came from the White House both before he said it and when he made the retraction?
It is so funny you said that, because I put that in my note this morning. I said, you know, it feels as if, you know, Petey and company could short the market into the end of the day as it rallies to new highs, and then they send him out at 9 o'clock and he makes a statement and boom, the market plunges, everybody covers their shorts, and then they come back out and say, no, he misspoke, the trade deal's fine, the president of all people comes out, you know, and is the big boy in the room suddenly, where, you know, he that takes control said, no, you know, the trade deal's fine, and then the market rallies right back. So yeah, I hear you loud and clear, and that's the first thing you think about, especially if you're a trader in the market like you and I have been for years and years and years, is that you immediately think about commentary, headlines that create these reactions, and you can't help but wonder, right? It wouldn't be like it's never happened before.
No, and it wouldn't be like you think these guys are all saints.
Correct. The same way, you know, Ackman did it back in March there when, you know, when he was short the market, he got on TV and he started crying and I don't want to be the one responsible for killing daddy and blah, 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 and the market tanked. And then conveniently, you know, 2 days later, you found out that he was a buyer during that whole, you know, covering his short position as the market was tanking.
You know, Kenny, I love to listen to you because you have other things that you can go from subject to subject, okay? But I often wondered why they kept on CNBC people on there for like a minute maybe. Because now that people are at home, they don't have that luxury, and they actually have some of these people on for like 4 and 5 minutes. And now I know why they used to keep them on for a minute. I mean, once they're done with their little spiel for their company, like you should continue to belong to the market. Oh, by the way, send us a check. Once they're past that, there's like nothing else they can talk about. If you shift subjects, it's like you're with your pet Airedale on there, for God's sake. I mean, I know it's a little harsh, but anyway. One question, I know you're on the road. Does the narrowness, I mean, is Apple going to go up $5 a day for the rest of our lives or what? I mean, the narrowness is scary here.
Apple's up again today, right?
Yeah.
I mean, first of all, I have to say, on Friday, when Apple came out and made the announcement that they were going to close stores in the 4 states, and it created all that anxiety and angst in the market, and the tech sold off, and the market sold off. You're going into the weekend. Oh, my God, Apple's closing stores. It must be a panic. What's everyone else going to do? Was honestly a little bit ridiculous.
Yep.
Certainly in hindsight, you could see how ridiculous it was. And then, you know, for anyone who really bet against Apple, they come out yesterday, completely told Intel to get lost, right, as they now develop their own chips, their own silicon chips, which they say will be better, will provide them, you know, a more direct line in the food chain. They're not going to depend on anybody else, all that stuff, which I suppose is all good. But why would anybody bet against Apple? Because now this new product that they're going to make with their own chips is going to force all the Apple groupies to go out and buy the new Apple product. You can just hear the cash register going cha-ching, cha-ching as we move into Christmas.
Well, I guess
it's incredible how to do it. So is it going to keep going up? I think Apple's one of those core holdings. I think you buy Apple and just forget you even own it, right?
Well, that I think certainly has made sense up till now, but they're worth $1.3 trillion now. I mean, what's the number? 5, 10, 100? I mean, 200? Where are we going with this?
Well, listen, it's a new world we live in, right? And especially, it's a new world after this, after the virus thing and the way people are now working and how they're going to live and remotely and using all this technology to stay connected and to do business. You know, Apple stands right there kind of at the crux of the old world and the new world. And so I think it's one of those names that you don't really know. What could the number be? I mean, it could just be going higher and higher, right?
Well, you don't know what the number is because you can't know what the number is because you don't know what the amount of dollars in the system is going to end up being.
Correct.
I mean, if we have, you know, $80 trillion in the mix, which we might have the way the Fed's going, Apple's worth $1,000 with those dollars,
right?
You know, I mean, we're reaching a point where, I mean, now we've got a massive debate countrywide. Are we going to continue to print $600 a month and send it to people or a week?
Right, because that's going to expire next month.
Yeah,
in July, right?
Kenny, one quick question. This is going to cause all the gray matter to come together in one spot. If the Fed wasn't printing money the way they are, and the government actually had to borrow to get the deficit they're running, what do you think the interest rate would be?
Interest rates would not be zero. That's for sure.
That would be, right? Yeah, it's a given. Okay.
Interest rates would not be zero. I mean, the interest rates are zero because the Fed controls it and they're allowed to just print all this money so they can keep rates at zero clearly as long as they want. And he's all said that, which is just certainly going to put that floor under the market, which is not going to allow the market to really, the market's not really going to trade on fundamentals. Oh. As much as it's going to trade on, wait, are you there?
Yeah, we're here.
I'm sorry about that. The market's not going to trade on fundamentals as much as it's going to trade on Fed action. But look, I just fear, and I know you fear too, when this starts to spin out of control and rates begin to rise, they're going to be so far behind the eight ball because the inflation story is going to happen so fast that, you know, they're not going to make quarter point jumps in the interest rate. As they raise rates, they're going to make, my fear is they're going to make full point jumps in interest rates to try to stop the bleed. And I think that's when it'll get, you'll see it spin out of control on the other side, right? Because people will start to panic and then inflation will get out of control. And the next thing you know, we're going to have 20% rates again.
Kenny, you and I better be in Monaco by the time that happens. I can't bear to watch it.
Listen, I'll be pushing up daisies, I hope, right?
Well, that's
by the time that happens.
You're good for another 50, buddy. Take care of yourself. SP Futures up 25, NASDAQ Futures up 63. Be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with their choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering three of our research newsletter, the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription. 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI ProDirect. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tim Al. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. We also have Mr. Jeff Joseph from Luckbox Magazine. Not in the studio. Love to see him in the studio, but we got him on the phone. SP Futures up 26. NASDAQ Futures up 64. Jeff, how are you, bud?
I'm good. I'm good. Hi, Chief. How are you?
All right. Did you get the call from the White House last night and make 70 spoo points?
No. I don't get the call anymore. No.
This was BS. Somebody on his show has got to get the call, so I get the call.
You got the call?
No.
All right. Then I'm hanging with you.
Let's see. Yeah. 70 spoos, of just a simple three or four line. I'm not greedy. God bless. Yeah. That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Not a bad opening.
What's it, $250 a point, right? Spoos? $250 a point, right? The big spoos?
Yeah.
Well, let's see. $250 times 100 times, say, a couple. That's not bad. A 25 grand a spoo? It is. Simple four line, 100 grand before breakfast? I'd even buy breakfast if I could find a place open. God. I don't know if you heard the last part of Kenny. And I should never do this to myself, Jeff. Now, when you're here, and I'm talking to you, and we're engaging during break, I don't torture myself like this. But when you're not here, this is what I just did to myself. I dug out, he mentioned that when the bleep hits the fan and all this money actually is in the system and people start to worry about it, inflation starts to move up, that we might not have quarter point increases. They might like be like half and three quarter point. So I said to myself, self, go back and check out when Paul Volcker came in and find out how these rates went up. God, this is brutal. 13% on October 6th, 1979, 15.5 on October 22nd. There's a number, 2.5 points in what, 2.5 weeks.
What else would about, you know, it's interesting you mentioned that. I don't mind sharing that over at Luckbox Magazine. We just sent our next issue off to print. It'll come out around July 1st, and it'll probably be the first national magazine that features, a cover image and cover story with Stephanie Kelton. So we did interview her. We reviewed her book, The Deficit Myth. We exclusive interview with us that we extensively got into modern monetary theory, and then we had a panel of economists that kind of weighed in against it. As you would imagine, there was a chorus from both the left and the right.
Where did my invitation?
I'm going to withhold my take on it for a moment, because I want to defer to yours. So I've just kind of been buried in this story for the last 2 weeks, and then we'll sit back and, you know, you can get the magazine for free at getluckbox.com. That's the digital edition, and our print will be out around July 1st. But I know what we've done with that story, and I know it's coming, but what I really want to do is kind of get your take on it. Now, she's picking up steam, obviously. You know, she's going to be very visible. I think she's going to be a highly visible face going forward. And I have to admit, there are elements about, well, there's one element about her story that's somewhat convincing, and that is the fact of the matter is 46 out of the last 50 years, the U.S. has run a deficit. and you know, and we're still in motion. Now this notion of printing money if you're a monetary sovereign without regard to the deficit, to me, just reeks of political convenience and nothing more than that. But there is an argument to be made that, hey, look, we've been doing it for a long time. When you think about it, this really isn't so radical. So I'm going to put this back on you. You give me the three strongest reasons that come to mind when why modern monetary theory is full of it. I really want to hear your thoughts, because I think I know what they would be, and I think I concur with those, but I'd like to hear you articulate it.
Back up just a hair, that when you have people say you're never going to repay the government loan, okay, you're never going to repay the World War II or Vietnam numbers, that part's true, Jeff. I mean, it's almost like a company that is long-term financing is not all stock, some of it's long-term bond. It's a way to finance the place. There's no reason if your growth is 3% a year and you've got, you know, your deficit is X and your borrowing is increasing by 1% a year, you can get away with that. Okay, so it's not like you have to go back. They're correct on that, okay? They're correct on that in the sense that there's really no reason for us next year to decide to, as long as we're growing at 3% and our deficit is growing at, you know, 1%, or it's not growing at all, there's no reason for us to all of a sudden start paying back stuff from 10 years ago like it's a credit card at 25%. I mean, they're right on that, okay, I believe. But the constant thing is we're always looking to the future. Right, and don't worry, in 10 years, our growth is going to be 5 because our policy is so good, a la Donald Trump, that even though we're growing our debt now at 4% a year, don't worry about it. Now that becomes very, very dangerous. Okay, because they're really over their own limit. You know what I'm saying? And they're saying, but our policies are so good that don't worry, 10 years from now, the growth's going to be 6% and we're only going to be increasing the deficit by 1% and extend that out 100 years and we're fine. Well, that's cool. But really, in the meantime, they're just printing money, right?
Right.
So the whole thing fails in
that
regard.
But having just consumed her book and spoken with her directly, I must say that there really isn't that promise that's offered,
it's implied.
It's not about growth. It's just about, hey, fact of the matter is,
it's implied.
We can invest in infrastructure and healthcare and do these things we need to do, to provide more government. That's a question I asked her as well. Is this just a way to expand government? And I'd be happy to share that answer she gave. But she's not promising that growth will offset this.
Well, we've never done.
That's the interesting thing. It's just there just really isn't a regard to what that deficit number is.
Well, that's right. And if I'll go back to what Milton Friedman said one day, they said, "Well, are you worried about the federal deficit?" Now, this was a time, and it's all changes, Jeff. That's why it's hard for me to. I'll get there, but as usual, I have 15 things I'm thinking about when I answer a question. But he said the deficit's not a problem. Now, this is in 1975. And he said, the reason why it's not a problem, it's like Jeff's household. Jeff owes his wife, you know, 40 grand for the new car. Who cares? The Jeff household is flat. Right? So, his point was, if we only borrowed money from American citizens and spent it on, you know, railroads or whatever, doing highways, byways, the money, the deficit is in-house, right? So it's not a problem. I mean, the government owes it to essentially the citizens that are benefiting from the roads, right? But now you get to the point where it's not all internal, it's half out external. So I doubt very seriously if Milton Friedman would give that answer today, because it's not internal. It's not just in Jeff's house.
Sure.
The guy next door, they borrowed money from him too. Well, now it's a problem. Yeah. Okay, so
no,
everything goes to the extreme. Even she, if she was here today, I would say, okay, you wrote the book and you stopped writing it a year ago, and now you're seeing trillions of dollars. We're talking about doubling the balance sheet of the Fed in like 4 weeks. If this had happened while you were writing the book, would your conclusion still be the same? And I'm going to say the answer is no.
Well, not exactly. I put that question to her.
Well, she can't say it now.
You know, basically, but on the heels of a $3 trillion stimulus package, and clearly the economy is going to need more, or that might be your perspective. What would be the mistake if we did nothing more than repeat the initial stimulus?
Well, but she's, if you were to say,
doubled up on it.
Even she has a number, though.
And
Jeff.
Her premise was that it simply would not be enough.
But even she. We're not borrowing from people. We're not. If I were to borrow from you, okay, and build a new gold, not a new one, a Golden Gate Bridge, which opens up a tremendous area of commerce and so forth. That the bridge is worth 100 times what we ever paid for it in terms of an ancillary growth. Correct. But that's not what we're doing. We're printing money and sending it to people. I mean, it's not close to being the same. And I don't know how these people think it is. But right now, if you look at the inflation over the last 20 years, and you look at the amount of money supply that has grown versus vis-a-vis the GDP, it's like 2.5%, 2.5 times what the GDP has grown. Okay, the rate of growth. Well, if you look at the rate of inflation in hospital areas, in taxes, and in higher education, it's right there. There has been a serious inflation in the last 20 years. It's just lied to us. We don't count. If you look at the CPI numbers, if you add higher education, taxation, which you barely even find in there, property tax I'm talking about, which is really lower education, right?
Yeah.
And medical stuff, if you add those together, it comes up to like 12% of somebody's basket. Now you explain to me how ignorant that is. So if you were to come clean on the inflation of the last 20 years, you would get a totally different number. So if you take it that way, all you're doing is like debasing your currency.
So that's the second point. So
yeah.
I asked for three. The first one was that the concept might work if it's contained within one balance sheet, but when you're borrowing from other countries, if you're monetary sovereign, it might work just in that notion, but when you're selling bonds elsewhere or borrowing money from other countries, that ultimately is going to debase your currency. And secondly, the inflation argument is that the trigger here is inflation. That's the KPI that everybody's watching. That's the downside of modern monetary theory. Their answer is that when inflation does appear, you address it through fiscal policy, which, which of course, you know, that just sounds like another problem waiting to happen. But I assumed that one of your contentions would be that inflation's not accurately and adequately measured.
Right.
In fact, you were the inspiration of a question I put to her exactly on that topic. Doesn't all this assume that, you know, we're accurately tracking inflation through the CPI? She double-talked that by answering that, sure, you know, if you're a family with a couple kids in college, CPI is not accurately speaking to the real inflation that you've seen because of higher education costs. But for the most part, her words, I don't fret the misassessment of CPI under her current measurements. So that doesn't cause her any sweat. All right. So those are two reasons. What would be another?
Well, the other is, I mean, when you have everything, there's a sense to this, and I wonder why. The modern monetarists, you know, her included, I'm not casting a stone anywhere. I don't understand why they don't believe that there's a sense to this, Jeff, that your currency is only valuable by its scarcity. And there's classical, not books, but papers written on this of what happens in a concentration camp where cigarettes are the medium of exchange. Okay, because a cigarette had, at least to those guys, not to me, had a value unto itself. And they would say, okay, a shot of booze, if you could find one, is worth two cigarettes. But everything was lined up to a medium of exchange, which is all the dollar is, right? Is a medium of exchange. If you understand the system and how it all works, I don't see how their theory ever gets out of the box, to be honest with you. Because all of a sudden, the army, you know, came to the concentration camp and said, okay, hey guys, we're rescuing you guys. By the way, here's 40 cases of cigarettes. And we'll be back tomorrow with other stuff because we got to go, you know, fight down the road a little bit. Well, what do you think happens to do you think the shot of booze is still two cigarettes now? It's not. I mean, but if you think about it on a base level, if you just double everybody's money, okay, we're not talking about the Milton Friedman, if I borrow money from Jeff to build something and I'm paying Jeff 5% and you have the return on the thing I'm building, be it Hoover Dam, be it wherever, it's 200%. Yeah, that's a great deal. But now, hey, we're not borrowing the money at all. We're just printing it. So it's at some point, people are just going to say, the reason why this cut of steak is now $20 a pound instead of 10
sure.
is because now I have $50 in my pocket, and I used to have 25. And the person with the steak going, hey, wait a minute, this isn't cutting it. I mean, it's all a question of relative value.
Yep. Third argument simply being how could it possibly be that you know, materially increasing the money supply doesn't result in inflation? How could that even make sense? Yeah. It's simple and obvious. Let me ask you another quick question. And sorry to be tapping into you on this topic, but it's
well, that's because you're sorry. You're sorry you didn't invite me.
I think of value here. What about the notion that when asked, all right, well, give us an example of where this would work. We see many Caribbean countries and Venezuela and other examples where, you know, it clearly didn't work. The only thing that they can do is point to Japan as being, you know, an example. And why isn't that, in your opinion, a relevant comparison?
You mean in terms of inflation?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know if they've increased their. They've just bought assets. They've propped their assets up. That's what's become sort of insidious with this, Jeff. Is it now? It's not going into it's starting to go into stakes and so forth. But for a while, it really just went into medicine and medical stuff. Because again, take it down to the base level. If Jeff is sitting there and you've got a house. And you're making money and you're spending it, and nothing really happens. And all of a sudden, one day somebody says, oh, by the way, to park in front of your own house is going to cost you $1,000. And you go, holy bleep, Batman. So now this thing's not even counted in the CPI. But now you got to shell out this $1,000. Well, now you got $1,000 less to buy everything else on, right? So if you don't count that $1,000 as part of the CPI, I'm going to say you have less money for a TV and for steaks and so forth, right? So the other stuff might actually be very well in check, even go down. I mean, you're probably not going to go buy a new suit because you spent the grand on a parking permit. So when you displace all this money, you essentially lose count. And in the early 70s, late 70s, early 80s, it started in consumer areas. It started in oil, really, and people thought it was the fault of the Arabs, correct? Then when it moved over to food, then, well, okay, the reason why food's going up so much is because we transport it in oil, and we got to use gas. And, oh, by the way, we have to dry our soybeans and corn, right? And that takes gas or oil. So they constantly blamed it on that area. That's why you see the, let's take out the food and energy, right? Because that's a holdover from the 70s. Until one day they said, well, we just got it everywhere. But look at what we had here in 1980. GDP minus 0.3%, sounds familiar. Unemployment, 7.2%, not near as bad as now. Inflation, 12.5%. God, talk about a horrible way to live, right? You're not growing, and so, I mean, that's pretty awful. And you know, why would we even take that chance? There can't be anybody, even in modern monetary theory, Jeff, there can't be anybody that says, honestly, to your face, let's just double the money supply this year and we're okay. There can't be anybody who really thinks that. It's ever read an economics book. I can't imagine that. Because how could that anybody, a fourth grader wouldn't sure. believe that.
Because the parallels perhaps to 1970 right now are as close as they ever
well,
could have been.
Well, that year I just went this weekend, the biggest money supply hit we had in any one of those years was a positive 12.5%. Now, one of the things, and I'll criticize myself here, one major change is now that they're pouring so much money into the system that the system can't even absorb it, right? So people are actually putting that money back to the Fed at night, where some weeks M0 is greater than M1, which M0 is money kicked back to the Fed overnight. So that's really, even though the Fed's putting it into the system, it's, they're actually draining it back out at night. So when the money supply looks like it's going up 40%, it's probably not. It's probably going up 20%. But that's plenty, right? Because look at the damage we did with 12.5. So what that comes out to, there's one major identity in all of economics. It's the money supply times the velocity of how many times the money is spent equals the gross national product times the price level. And no matter what you do, no matter what you do, that particular equation holds fort. So right now, if we double the money supply in 1 year, which is an incorrigible amount, right? If they gave us all, if they could line up every individual citizen, said how much you got, 500, or now you got 1,000, then it would probably double in 1 day, right? But you can't do that. So you're forcing it in. Some people are getting it. Some people aren't. It's very uneven, which is the reason why I don't like it. To go back to my days at Pullman, everybody else was on a cost of living thing. I wasn't, because I was management. So 1 year, the cost of living was 12.5%. They liked me enough to give me a 5% raise. And oh, by the way, my total was 5%. So I was actually down 7 on the year. Tanks for nothing, as the movie said. Right? So it's never even. And now, this time it's going into the stock market, which is the same thing it did in the Weimar Republic, in a way, same thing it did in Venezuela, the same thing it's doing in Iran. So, I mean, it's not like there isn't a historical perspective on this. There is, if you want to look. But the other side of the coin, just keep printing, everything's okay. But you're not going to get any politician right now to say, let's cut off the dole at a 40% unemployment or whatever some levels of society have here. But it's not like we're borrowed. There's the discipline. I mean, you know, I guess the fourth one, Jeff, will be, if you don't borrow for the money, where is the discipline? I mean, right now, I just asked Kenny, if we weren't printing the money, okay, and we looked at I've got our fiscal deficit this year so far is $2 trillion, and we're, 7 months into it, 8 months? So it's going to be three and a half. If the federal government, which isn't me, obviously, if the federal government actually had to go out and borrow that money instead of print it, what do you suppose the interest rate would be? What would they have to do to you to borrow $30,000 from you hopefully you're doing real well? What do you think you'd have to pay somebody who's not doing so hot to lend them money? It's not going to be zero.
Yeah.
And so the easy way out is just to print it. Well, I don't think if we had a constitutional convention tomorrow, there is no way that the citizenry gives the president or whoever's in charge, just print it and go. That's why the Fed is in there, supposedly, as a disciplinarian in this whole thing, and they're right with them.
You know, an interesting extension of the discipline argument that you just made was a letter that we got from one of our readers anticipating this next lockbox issue about modern monetary theory, who said, okay, let's say all those premises are true, then just explain the simple answer, a simple question, why do we pay taxes then? if the government can just at whim, you know, print money, then why are we paying taxes?
Well, I mean, the reason why they did, and actually they did expand money supply a couple times during the Depression. Actually, they did for sure in 1936 when they went out and bought everybody's gold, right? And they also paid the checks to everybody who the World War I checks. And, you know, one of the things, Jeff, I don't remember if you have read about this, out of all the things Roosevelt did, the oddest thing I thought that was so out of character for him was to really fight the notion of giving the people their World War I checks. And even that bill, they had to go over him he vetoed it, and then Congress overrode the veto. For those who don't know what I'm talking about, in those days, if you joined the army, I guess they didn't want to pay you if you croaked, Jeff. I don't know what the reason was, but you didn't get paid by the month or whatever. You got paid when you got out, right? And there were the people who were demonstrating or actually living by the White House in Washington the guy who said, I will return, the general, that was his name was. He and Eisenhower cleaned all those people out. But they were bitching about is they wanted their 1,200 hours. that was their World War One check that they never got. And for some reason why we never gave it to them, I don't know. But there was a big fight over there for 17 years. Well, somehow in 1936, they decided to give this check to these people. So the money supply rose because they essentially printed the money and sent it to them like we're doing now. And there were people, that's why people will say that we actually came out of the depression in 36 because between buying gold from people, but I don't know why Roosevelt was so far against it. But what I'm saying is the reason why they were concerned about doing this in the depression was, what if we print all this money and inflate the hell out of the place, and 5 years later we still have a depression? Then what? Well, that's the thing right now. When we keep betting, and this is a short term solution, we're we use the term.
Why wouldn't the 36 experience apply then? It worked then in the 36.
But then we went right back the next year when they stopped sending the money out.
Mm-hmm.
So we went right back in, and the Fed used their reserve requirement thing the next year, and they actually cut back a little bit. But basically, it was a one-year shot. You sent people with no money a check for $1,200, and they spent the $1,200.
Yep.
But right now, I mean, we continue to have this idea. I mean, when this all started, wasn't it, we're priming the pump, and the economy will catch fire? They didn't plan on the COVID, obviously.
Sure.
But but does anybody think we're still priming at this point?
No.
I mean, I don't know there's some middle ground here, Jeff, that somehow our politics can't seem to find. Can we find a way to help people over the hump and, by the way, get people back to work and try and find a way where the average person in this country makes a living wage? We got to go for a short break. We're up 33 points now, so what are we up, 80 off the low? Just on the Bannon comments, this is, Jeff, this is so scary,
About 56 off the low, I think.
I thought we were down at 50.
No, about 80, that's right.
NASDAQ futures up 71. That's scary. We'll be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, Give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Al. This is Matt Weber on the board. We have Mr. Jeff Joseph as a co-host this morning. S&P Futures up 31.75. This is after a 50-point drop last night as Mr. Bannon came out and said the deal with China's off, then, oh no, it's not off, it's back on, we bounced right back up. If I wrote this in a fiction novel, I wouldn't sell. If you wrote this in a magazine, Jeff, you wouldn't sell a magazine, let's put it that way, if you called it fiction. NASDAQ futures up 72, Dow futures up 316. Around the rest of the world, we've got Europe, I got so much stuff up here now. The DAX up 329, 2.7%, so they're still on a roll. FTSE up 91, 1.5%. CAC around up 88, 1.7%. Over in Asia, Nikkei up 111, 0.5%. Shanghai up 5, call that flat. Hang Seng up 396, 1.6. These guys have all these political problems like 2 months ago, and all the market goes up every day. 10-year yield, 0.73%. The Bund, minus 0.42. Japan positive 0.005, so just hanging on the positive. Brent up 68 cents. We've got ours unchanged here today, which is kind of odd since the Brent's up a whole 1.6%. Natural gas down 2 cents to 164. RBOB up 3 cents, 132. And we have gold up $8 now, 1774. Silver up a dime back over 18 bucks at 18.005, so barely over 18. Matty, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Still working on a crash on the south side that happened earlier this morning. I-57 on the northbound side just before Sibley. We had an earlier crash that was blocking the two left lanes. Now it's just down to the one left lane that's closed. So crews are getting that cleaned up, but that's causing some delays. From 80 to the Dan Ryan is up over 20 minutes now due to that crash on I-57, so keep that in mind. No issues on the Ryan itself. Bishop Ford looking good, as is the Stevenson. A bit of a slowdown around Cicero on the Stevenson, but nothing of major note. Eisenhower and the North Side Expressways are quiet, except for we do have one crash on the outbound Kennedy. Looks like the outbound side at Cumberland, there's a crash blocking the left lane. But everything else is looking good out there. One other note that we touched on briefly in hour one, the CTA, as part of its ongoing efforts to welcome riders back to public transit, Chief, are distributing free travel healthy kits to customers this week, featuring a bottle of hand sanitizer, a reusable cloth mask, and a healthy riding tips guide. They'll be out there handing those out today from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m., and we'll be handing those out throughout the week to try to encourage folks to start taking CTA again. Weather today, it's going to be a bit cooler than it's been. Cloudy skies early, then we should see some sunshine later on, a high of 75. Right now it's overcast and 64 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunny and hot today, high of 110. Right now it's clear and 81. In sports, the big news developing right now is that Major League Baseball plans to hold a 60-game season after all. The league plans to start on July 24th, just needs players to sign off on a health and safety protocol and to pledge to arrive at home stadiums by July 1st, so they have time to prepare. This, as you may remember, is the agreement that they came to back in March before 3 months of failed negotiations to impose a schedule of its desired length, so the owners could basically propose any schedule as long as they paid the prorated salary. So they chose to do 60 games, and the league will start July 24th and end by September 27th for the regular season before the playoffs. Chief,
Jeff, I'm just reading here, which I do on break. I said when you're here, I have somebody to talk to. And I don't go into this kind of crazy stuff. Just as Matty Weber is very upset that he cannot invent a new fetish, they've all been invented before, we really can't invent a monetary trick or a governmental trick that hasn't been invented before. I mean, if you look at Rome, when Rome started their coinage, the coin that people had enough silver in it to essentially be worth a day's pay. Okay, and as time went on, the amount of silver kept going lower and lower to the point where they had the, says elsewhere also, not all kinds that circulated contained precious metals, as the value of these coins was too great to be convenient for everyday purchases. They got so valuable, the ones that actually had silver in them. The dichotomy existed between the coins with intrinsic value and those with only a token value. Are we getting to the token value stage here? And Rome did the same thing. And look where they ended up. Over a period of 100 years, they just debased the currency to base the currency to finally it was worth nothing. Is that the road we're on? I'm sure they had a great time in the meantime.
It's a good argument, but there's many more contemporary examples of that, so we don't have to go back that far. I'm a little bit more compelled by Matt's notion that we can't we can't identify new fetishes. So.
Well, there's always been somebody as perverted before that already invented it.
No, I think technology enables a whole new breed of fetishism that we haven't contemplated before.
See, now, but here's a guy that's thought about this subject, Manny. Does that make you nervous or what? I was going to say the only probably addition you could
let's say researched it.
Yeah, so God, you know what? Somebody sent me. I said this once years ago in here. Somebody sent me this massive link to a list of like every fetish and how they're all named. There's stuff in there you would never even believe. You know there's a fetish for dragging a lady out of quicksand. It has a name to it. And that's why people used to watch was it Xena Warrior Princess, because like every few shows she'd be in quicksand and have to drag her out.
No kidding.
Yeah.
that's great trivia.
Well, I'll tell you, she was hot. Was that Lucy Long, what was her name?
Lucy. Yeah, that was an awesome show.
Well, see, that's why you liked it. You don't even know that was
sure.
Your fetish.
I just didn't know why. Yeah. That's right. Okay.
God, remember they dragged a lot of quicksand? That was hot. God. Anyway, so, but Jeff, these are big issues, and the problem I think you have is even if she's right in the short term, okay, if your country's in trouble, and you've got a pandemic, which we do. I'm not so sure that she's all that wrong in a temporary situation. Mm-hmm. Heal the wounds, get everybody back going. In a year, 10 years, this $3 trillion we are throwing away this year, are we going to be able to pay that back? I'm going to say yes. Okay, so I'm not absolutely against saying these people are already. It's because they're not. But the point is, what if this becomes habit? Because the problem I have is that we didn't start from scratch. We started in 2008 with a problem with too much debt, correct? And all we did to fix the problem was add more debt. So I think that we were in trouble before this even started, because we're just continually... Name me a year in the last 7 or 8 where the growth in the federal deficit or in the debt didn't exceed... The growth of the GDP.
GDP, sure.
So, I mean,
no,
so...
And I can't. And in the conclusion you came to, at the outset of this conversation, I mentioned that I had reached my own conclusions, but I wasn't going to share that. But that is the same conclusion I came to, is that on a short-term basis, of course, we have our own history again, 46 out of the last 50 years of essentially deficit spending that you can look to that says, yeah, this may work on a short-term basis, but I just think on a long-term basis, this is nothing more than political cover for Keynesian policies that are seeking some new, a new wrapping. I don't see this as anything but a way of putting new wrapping paper over an old gift. It's kind of regifting the fruitcake here.
Well, the question maybe you should have asked her, and maybe you did, is now we're up to $26 trillion in debt, which actually is more because Carl says there's some of that stuff off balance sheet. So the real number is probably maybe a little more than that, but say 26.
How much is too much?
Yeah, well, but now the only way we're getting away with it is by pouring so much money in the system where the interest rates are zero. So if the interest rate was, I'll use a more normal 2.5-3%, that's been the risk-free rate for centuries, what would that even be? We're talking... Mm-hmm. Well, what's 3 times 72? 78 billion dollars a year? No, 26 rent, $780 billion a year, right? We're paying an interest. If we had to pay a normal number. How the hell do we do that?
Yeah.
So, I mean, the only reason why we're getting away with it, but now on the flip side of the coin,
of course, her argument is, well, you don't have to pay it. I mean, you just keep on printing more money.
But now all your savers never make a dime. So what about them? I mean, you've got, when something makes, and I've always had a, I don't know, it came down to, the reason why I feel this way, Jeff, is not because I'm a genius or anything, I'm not. But when I started in the trading world, there were no computers on the floor, they were illegal. So you had to make your judgments based on somewhat of a common sense. Okay, so when you sit there and say, Jeff's uncle deposits money to be managed at, you know, the chief's investment advisor firm or brokerage firm, either wherever he wants to do it. The first thing I do is put your uncle's money in a bond for 30 years that pays no interest.
Hmm.
And you say, well, wait a minute, what kind of the whole thing is built on, it's built on a screwy foundation that there is no return to money, to assets. And yet when you build anything, if you and I decide tomorrow we're going to build a hot dog stand, well, okay, we're going to need some concrete, we're going to need some metal, we're going to need a hot dog cooker. And oh, by the way, if we don't have the money, and Maddie Weber has the money and doesn't know what to do with it, we're not saying in a bad way, what I'm saying is if he has extra assets that he's willing to lend, that's how the economy works. We're going to turn around, we're going to pay Maddie. Hey, man, you know what? You're making 3% in the bank. Duh. We're going to pay you 6. Let us build our hot dog stand. We'll give you, statements every month. And, oh, by the way, we're going to make a 10% return on the hot dog stand so we can not only pay you your 6 back, we're going to make money on it. Well, if the idea is that somehow or another people with assets don't get anything for that, you've got a skewed system. I mean, and I don't think you ever get anywhere, Jeff, when you start out with a skewed system. I mean, what's the long, for the next 100 years, people that save up money will get nothing for them. Certain people can get to use that money for nothing. Other people have to pay 25% for it. Or if you're a plumber, you're paying probably 10 and signing a personal guarantee. It's totally uneven. That's why you see the apples of the world going up every day, nothing else going up. Because nobody, certain people can access it and other people can't. So it ends up screwing up your entire society, I think. And I don't think they've come to that conclusion yet. And that's one you didn't ask me for. I don't know if you agree with that.
Well, I hear you. So let me ask you, as long as I get to interview you today, what else are you looking at? What else is on your mind this week?
Well, the thing is, being in the business this long, the thing that is always I'm afraid of. Well, two things. One, on the inflation watch, there's no infrastructure. When I was at Pullman, I was the guy who managed the infrastructure. If the inflation rate went up 2% that quarter, I called the Boston people and said, by the way, you owe us another 2% on this contract. I went out to our union guys and said, you guys, they didn't get full 2%. They got, you know, 1.75 or something. You guys are going to get a raise this quarter. And I called up the guy who was making the air conditioners. Hey, by the way, you're going to get 2% more. There was an infrastructure. Mm-hmm. So right now, next month, if these, I won't say idiots, come out with a CPI of, you know, by September, CPI is up 2% that quarter. I guarantee you, the fair man that you are, if you have 20 people working at Luckbox, there is no even hint that those people are all going to get a 2% raise. Mm-hmm. There's no infrastructure. I mean, you may give it to them at the end of the year because you're smart enough to be on shows like this and you're writing columns about this. But if you're just micking them up, you don't think you owe them anything. Yet the infrastructure back in the day, there was such an infrastructure. So there's none of that now. So the guy who's still making $36,000 a year medium as a median wage, if our inflation next year is a recognized 10% or 2 years later, that guy's nowhere on earth is he getting an automatic raise of $3,600 just to keep him even. So we don't have that infrastructure in place really at all, do we?
Well, that's a really good point, and that comes back to the notion of not having a truly real or accurate assessment of inflation or CPI. You know?
Well, because as if you ask yourself, if all of a sudden we had a 10% inflation next year, if everybody everywhere either got a 10% raise, or if I'm selling widgets, my widget went up 10%, that's the way it sort of should work if you're adding 10% more currency to the mix. Now, the sure. people that are doing this new monetary theory, that's not what they're thinking. They're thinking that some people get to take advantage of it and the government's the person. Okay, but as a citizen, do you want grandma with a 10% inflation rate getting 1% in the bank? I mean, what are you doing to her? All you're doing is dropping the value of her currency every year by 9%. It's the same thing as negative interest rate, right? I give you $100, at the end of the year you give me 95 back. Well, that's pretty white of you, right? Or whatever.
Well, and that directly impacts the American worker,
yeah.
the wage earner, of course, because, and we've seen it in just technology and the efficiencies of the average worker having been multiplied many times over the last four decades, yet their purchasing power is literally no different than it was four decades, even though they're far more productive. So where's the delta there? Who's making that profit? And that's the corporations and the employers and not the American worker.
And why do you suppose, Jeff? I have this conversation with Carl all the time, but I'll ask you a few questions. I remember this for some stupid reason. I really enjoyed the topic. I couldn't do a calculus problem if you held a knife to my throat. But I really like the economic stuff, so I keep reading and I keep up on it. So I remember what I learned in college, just because I like it, right? There's other classes, not so much. Chemistry, But why is it that people kind of forget the basics on stuff and just keep wandering? And whatever's good for them, this is not right, Jeff. Why is it that we think we can pop this out there and not pay people any kind of interest rate, and yet charge the same person 25% on a credit card? I mean, the guy might have $40,000 in a bank and $5,000 on his credit card, and he's paying me. I mean, God bless it. If I'm in a bank, it'd be like the guy in the Animal House. Isn't this great? I mean, why do we put up with this crap? I guess my question.
Well, first of all, you know, there inflation isn't recognized as being any kind of problem right now for, you know, issues that you discussed previously. Perhaps it's not being accurately measured. But I think that chorus could be a little bit louder if we were seeing, you know, a strong evidence of inflation by virtue of the traditional measurement baskets.
If right now
that's not even... Yeah, it's really low on the list.
I'll say this. If most people, and again,
Confederate statues is a bigger issue than inflation.
But if most people were not getting their hospitalization from their company, it would be number one on everybody's list.
Uh-huh. That's right.
I mean,
That's true.
If you're making $50,000 a year and you're getting your hospitalization paid for by a company, it's really, in the last 20 years, it hasn't been a problem for you. Although, I actually have an article somewhere, I don't know if I threw it or whatever, it was two ladies wrote it. They went back, and how they got this data, I have no idea, but it was a really well-researched, it seemed, article something like you guys would do, where in the last 10 years, even if you get your hospitalization paid for by a company, the increase in the amount you've had to contribute and the increase in the deductible, your wage increases did not keep pace with that, even if they were paying essentially for your insurance. So in other words, I mean, we did that at PTI. We used to pay everybody's everything. And then it got to, well, if you want the extra dental, you got to come up with $40 a month. Everybody's had that happen to them. And even though we were absolutely against it, even at some point, you know, if you want the extra life insurance, you'd say, hey, it's $5 a month. Most companies now, the deductible used to be, I'll pick a number, 500, now it's 2000. But you're still covered. Even that person, his wages have not kept up with that piece of the medical stuff. God help you if you're making $52,000 a year and are buying your own insurance, because you're over the $50,000 mark, which I think is the Obamacare where they help you out. How the hell would a family of four making $50,000 a year pay $1,200 a month with an $8,000 or $10,000 deductible, Jeff?
Yep.
I mean, we're not even. It is so far ahead of a new TV, so far ahead of a new suit, a new Nehru jacket, gasoline. It's not even close.
Yep, no.
But those people don't have a voice, right? If all of a sudden you pull the hospitalization away from all these guys on CNBC and they saw how much it went up every month, it would be a topic. It's just not for them. And they get to choose them, it appears.
So speaking of voice, can we switch gears with only a few minutes remaining? It looks like we have that podcast called The Political Trade that we're looking at the political prediction markets all the time and placing active wagers on political outcomes legally.
Yes.
So obviously the tide has really shifted. You know, in the prediction markets, Trump was at 55 cents or 55%, and Biden was at 44 for all of the year. But then as soon as the virus hit, things started to flip, and Trump fell below 50%. And now even in the prediction markets, which were always lagging the national polls by many points, Trump's behind Biden by 4 or 5 cents in the prediction markets right now, and twice that much in national polls by about 10%.
They're going to win or they're going to run? This is going to win, right?
That Biden's going to win. Yes,
right.
real strong lead, and I think it's becoming kind of the conventional wisdom accepted everywhere, prediction markets, polling markets, that this looks like a landslide. Do you have any perspective?
I asked Matty Weber on the way in, what are the chances that neither one of these guys even run? That Trump totally flips out between now and then. Looks to me like he's wobbling a little bit. And that Biden all of a sudden has a health issue, which some people are accusing him. I mean, what are the chances?
I would buy that, no.
Okay, is it zero?
No. I there's a very specific point. I'll tell you what the number is. It's 88% right now that Biden's going to secure the nomination.
Okay.
At least that's what the prediction market says. If you go to predictit.org, it's currently trading at 88 cents as a binary option. Will Biden, secure the Democratic nomination? So that's a hell of a return. You can, for 88 cents, you can pick up 12 cents in the next, 4 months. That's not bad. That's, annualized 36, that's pretty good. That's almost a 45% annual return on something that, to me, that looks like a lock. If he stays in the basement, he should make it to November.
So I think they both will run. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
I do, too.
But
sure.
I worry, as someone, who's no Biden fan, but as someone who absolutely despises Trump and would vote for a fire hydrant over him, I still worry that, Hillary had a big lead 4 years ago. And from everything that was published and read and leading up to it.
Sure.
How accurate are these? I really don't know. I've lost all faith.
Yeah, well, what perhaps has changed is some new election whisperers are out there, like Rachel Bitticoffer. You might have seen her on Bill Maher a couple months ago. We had her on our podcast not too long ago. She's the one that's making the... She has a distinct progressive
political bias, but nevertheless, her data is good. And I think what the value that she adds to the discussion is that she claims and has evidence of it that the so-called middle, the swing voter, is vastly overstated, and that the polarized partisanship is such that there really isn't a middle, and the middle has less impact than one would think, and is being overmeasured. And applying that lens to her forecasts, you know, she's like a 350 electoral votes, and you know, an easy Biden kind of rub. And that, to answer your question, Matt, that middle has been decidedly declining over the last 4 years.
The silent majority is no longer a majority.
There is of a middle. It's less now, and that you know, that the partisan divide has been determined, and that she sees a very clear. Her bet currently right now is that it's 50-50 that the Democrats take the Senate and have a sweep. You know, retain the House, take over the Senate by winning over four seats, and then of course, you know, electoral landslide as well.
We don't have any time, but I was going to say, if he picks a vice presidential person, that somehow he can't discipline, and they take the party so far crazy left, he could lose.
Well, to closing point, and to that point, I think most people are smart enough to recognize now that the vice presidential pick of his is likely really the presidential pick at this point, and that's the lens that I think both Democrats and Republicans are going to be using. And
I thought I just said that, but you. I thought I just said that, but you said it better, as usual.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jeff. Terrific stuff.
Thank
SP
you.
Futures up 31.
Hi, Chief.
The NASDAQ Futures up 69. I just wish I'd have gotten the call from the White House. I'd be up 70 spoo. Anyway, back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.